Today on Wings, a look back at campaigns leading up to Ireland's historic referendum to repeal the Eighth Amendment and legalize abortion on May 25th, 2018.
Hey, hey, ho, ho. The Eighth Amendment's got to go.
You!
Oh my God, like things are actually changing and like we can make things change.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
For Wings, I'm Sarah Newton. On May 25th, the country of Ireland voted 66.4% to 33.6% in favor of overturning the country's abortion ban, which was introduced after a referendum in 1983 to grant equal rights to pregnant women and unborn children. The Irish Parliament amended the abortion legislation in 2013 and legalized abortion only in cases where a woman's life was at risk. In 2015, the UN recommended Ireland call for a referendum to repeal the Eighth Amendment, saying it was concerned about Ireland's highly restrictive legislation. The UN Human Rights Committee and citizens groups in Ireland joined the UN in making that call, and in March 2018, Irish Housing Minister Eoghan Murphy signed an order setting the date of May 25th for the now historic referendum. Woman on the Line producer Aoife Cook originally broadcast the following interviews on 3CR Community Radio in Australia. Together for Yes campaigner Claire Brophy, Karen Toomey, co-founder of Repeal Global, and Maria Nilartha from the company Platform, talk with Aoife about their work to secure a Yes vote. First, Claire Brophy about the impact of the Eighth Amendment on women's lives in Ireland.
I'm Claire Brophy. I'm one of the team of people working on Together for Yes, which is the campaign for a Yes vote in the referendum to remove the Eighth Amendment from the Irish Constitution.
Okay, what's the Eighth Amendment in detail?
The Eighth Amendment was inserted into the Constitution in 1983 by referendum. What it states is that the life of the unborn is equal to the right to life of the mother, and that its right to life will be vindicated by law in Ireland. So basically it means that as soon as a woman becomes pregnant in Ireland, her life is equalised with the implanted embryo, with the fetus inside her. And a lot of people have died because of the Eighth Amendment since 1983. We know of a lot of names, like Savita Halappanavar is probably the most famous. People like Bimbo Onanuga, Dara Kivlahan, Migrant Y was a really famous case where a woman was actually detained in the country because she didn't have the papers to travel abroad for an abortion. She was actually restrained and forcibly hydrated and kept pregnant until they delivered by C-section against her will. And that only happened in 2014. So we can't legalise any kind of abortion law in Ireland until the Eighth Amendment is repealed.
So when you say that women are dying and pregnant people are dying, you're talking about a legal situation where the right to life of the fetus is equal to the woman. Why are women dying in that context if there's an equal right to life?
Well, it's a completely unique constitutional situation. There's nothing like it in any other constitution in the world. And the reason that people are dying is because in a situation where a woman goes into distress or a woman's health is at risk, doctors cannot do anything to treat the woman's health if she's pregnant, in case the healthcare might intrude on the welfare of the fetus. So it happened in the case of a woman called Michelle Hart, who had cancer. She was going through cancer treatment, and when she found out she was pregnant, they discontinued her cancer treatment because of the Eighth Amendment, because it would have impacted negatively on the health of the fetus. She wanted to travel for an abortion. Unfortunately, she couldn't get to it in time. And she died. And so it's a really time-sensitive issue, abortion. You know, as soon as a person has chosen an abortion, they tend to want to do it as fast as possible. And the only way legally to do it is to travel. So in 1992, in Ireland, there was a referendum to allow people the right to travel. Before that, we didn't even have that right. That was because of a case called the X case, where a 12-year-old girl who was the victim of rape became suicidal as a result of being pregnant after the rape, and the courts decided that she had a right to abortion because her life was at risk, not just her health. And that is where it supersedes. So it's just a complete legal quagmire. It's really difficult for doctors to know when the balance from a woman's health being at risk turns to her life being at risk, and people are dying because of it.
So the Eighth Amendment also affects maternity services and wanted pregnancies that aren't related to abortion. What issues come up in those cases?
It affects wanted pregnancies in the situations where a person who's pregnant has a diagnosis of a fatal fetal abnormality. That abnormality means that the fetus won't survive beyond birth. It's basically a situation where the woman's body is a life support machine. And typically, those kinds of diagnoses only happen after about 20 weeks, give or take. And so for some people, and it's not all people, but a lot of people in those situations just find it very difficult to continue with a pregnancy after that, especially a lot of these people already have kids. More than 50% of people who have abortions already have children. For fatal fetal abnormality, just the continuation of the pregnancy can be really emotionally draining, especially if people are asking them excitedly, when are you due? And they kind of have to just shake their heads and say, no, this isn't how this looks. So they want abortion access, and they can't do it in Ireland. There's a group now here called Terminations for Medical Reasons. Couples who've the experience of having travelled to England and have had abortions there, and the English health service have been fantastic and have taken care of those people when Irish, the health service just couldn't because of the Eighth Amendment. But what's really tragic is the stories that they tell of having to bring the remains of their loved and wanted babies back by courier or in cooler boxes with boxes of frozen peas around them on the ferry. It's just barbaric, and there's absolutely no reason for it. We have the medical care here. It's just the legal issue is the stalling point, and that's why we can't provide that treatment here.
And I know a lot of doctors say that a lot of the laws don't make any medical sense, but their hands are tied by the Constitution, a pretty unusual situation.
Exactly, yeah. And no doctors should have to be poring over legal documents when they're trying to figure out how best to treat a person whose health is deteriorating really, really quickly. Doctors who treated Savita have said that had the Eighth Amendment not been in place, they would have been able to give her the abortion that she asked for, and that the sepsis would not have set in, that she would have survived.
Many people around the world did hear the case of Savita Halappanavar, but maybe if you could give an overview. You've suggested that she passed away due to sepsis after requests for termination were refused.
Yeah, Savita was a woman, she was a dentist. She was born in India and she lived in Galway with her husband Praveen.
In the west of Ireland?
Yeah, they had a very wanted pregnancy, and then at 17 weeks, which I think is about 15 weeks gestation, her cervix opened, which meant her waters broke. When she was brought into the hospital, because there was still a fetal heartbeat, they couldn't do anything. And she, at that stage, understood. And they asked, can you perform an abortion? Because they understood the dangers of infection. And they were refused.
What you mentioned there is something that I think is hard for people with more practical access to healthcare to understand. You know, not all of Australia, but most of Australia, these questions don't come up. It's not part of the constitution, even though access can be complicated in certain places. But in Ireland, the key criteria is the fetal heartbeat.
That seems to be the be all and end all, and that seems to be what doctors look for as a measure for life. I mean, in that situation, there's no question that a fetal heartbeat didn't equal the life that Savita had. And it just goes to show the damage that the Eighth Amendment had, because it superseded her other human rights and her right to healthcare and her right to be respected and her right to dignity. And so it all comes back to the Eighth Amendment. And this is an amendment that was put into the Constitution at a really dark time in Irish history. And legal experts who were involved in its insertion in 1983 have since said that it was a mistake. And so the only way forward now, and the only way that Ireland can even begin to come up to the standard level of abortion access globally and in Europe, is to repeal it.
We spoke a bit about some of the really complicated pregnancies that people can have under the Eighth Amendment, but we know, of course, that the majority of issues around abortion are not wanted pregnancies that are ending tragically. And I suppose I just wanted to ask if you could speak about how people are having abortions, the non-legal side of things, you know, what's actually happening.
Either they're booking flights to England or the Netherlands. It's a class issue, because that's, can you afford flights? Do you have a passport? Can you afford childcare for the 2 days that you might be away? Can you get time off work?
Do you have a visa?
Exactly. And visas take a long time. Bureaucracy here is slow.
And how many people are travelling?
At the moment, the figure is 10 people per day from Ireland. And so it's something that just comes into my head every time I'm in the airport looking around. I'm lucky that I've never had to go through it myself, but I'm really conscious now. I can't get out of my mind that looking around, there's people, it's not just young people. A lot of these people are people who have 3 or 4 children or have as many children as they want. And they know that this is absolutely what they have to do. So it's really hard. The other option for people, if they can't travel, is the illegal option, which is the abortion pills. They are a really safe medicine. They're on the World Health Organization list of essential medicines, but in Ireland they are illegal because they are abortion pills. And so the prison sentence for administering those pills, for procuring them for someone else or for taking them, is 14 years in prison. And that's from a law that was brought into Ireland in 2014. Before that, we depended on the 1861 law, the Offences Against the Person Act, which was life in prison, so 14 years. They thought that was a nice step down. And those pills are accessed online. People place the orders. Because they're illegal, they can't come through our postal system, so people get them sent to Northern Ireland, but it's a different legal jurisdiction. It's part of the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland. So they get sent there, and then they get brought down however they can be brought. And people take them in their bathrooms and their bedrooms alone.
And of course, there are issues with people ordering pills that turn out to be paracetamol or something. There's issues with the postal system arriving. And really, it's also about fear and stigma and the rare but possible circumstances where something can go wrong. What are the issues there?
Because it's illegal, if someone is scared, they can't go to a doctor because they're terrified that they might be arrested. They are terrified that in some situations they might be deported. You know, a lot of people's situations here are precarious. And particularly if a large proportion of the people who need access to these pills desperately are people who don't have access to visas. Another issue is just Peter Boylan. He's an obstetrician and gynecologist who worked in Ireland for 40 years. But he keeps saying that one day we're going to wake up to a news story of a girl or a woman who's bled to death on her bathroom floor because of taking those pills. They are really safe, but without doctor supervision, any medicine isn't safe, you know? And the idea that they can't just talk to a doctor or just ask, it's really humiliating.
On Wings, you are listening to organizers who helped pass the Yes referendum that deleted the 8th Amendment to the Irish Constitution and paved the way for a broader choice to have an abortion. The interviews were conducted shortly before the 2018 referendum by Aoife Cook of Australia's Women on the Line. The editor and presenter for Wings is Sarah Newton.
Next, Aoife talks about the campaign to repeal the 8th with Repeal Global co-founder Karen Toomey.
I'm Karen Toomey, TV and film producer, and I co-founded Repeal Global in 2016. Repeal Global was originally set up as an online platform to connect a kind of expats and our allies abroad to engage people to get involved in the fight to repeal the 8th. And then from an online thing, it kind of grew into a global community, really, of people fighting to repeal the 8th.
With Repeal Global, what have the group been doing over the years? Obviously, a lot of repeal campaigners have been working on the ground in Ireland, don't have that option online in the same way. What pieces of work did you decide would be the most useful?
We started as a solidarity thing. Set up solidarity events abroad to coincide with the March for Choice that was happening in Dublin. And people started doing little solidarity events just that day to coincide, and photo events and videos and protests and different things. And a lot of my friends that were at the march here in 2016, when we started doing our solidarity events worldwide, you know, a lot of people were talking about it at the march. And then we felt like solidarity is actually really powerful. So in 2016, when we set Repeal Global up, we ended up having 32 solidarity events in 2016, from China to Cambodia to Melbourne to Vancouver. And it really grew from an online community, from Facebook, really. From there, I think organic communities grew, like in repeal groups. Online is kind of the network, but then people do, especially coming up to the referendum, are doing their own informational events abroad. And then that's kind of tied in with the kind of Home to Vote campaign, which London Irish ARC have kind of spearheaded.
Well, tell us about that. What is it?
So the Home to Vote campaign, I suppose, is kind of modelled off the Yes Equality one slightly as well, the way, because obviously kind of started from that.
The Yes Equality campaign was Ireland's marriage equality referendum, yeah, yeah. Where a lot of young people in particular around the world came home on the night of the vote or the week of the vote to vote. Mm-hmm. And so Home to Vote is modelled off that.
Mm-hmm. So London Irish Abortion Rights Campaign, they have a huge network of people in London and they kind of spearheaded that Home to Vote campaign. And they've like created a really great website and the social media kind of stuff around that and the facts and everything, because there's a lot of information to get through about the legalities of the voting and all that. From there, a lot of our Repeal Global groups and stuff have been doing different events, like in Melbourne, you've been doing a lot of fundraising, and all over the place, really, in Europe and stuff, people have been doing fundraising events. And our next kind of thing in the Be My Yes campaign. So for people who can't afford to come home to vote or who can't legally vote, and then we'll be having like a little social media thing, which I know London Irish ARC will be kind of doing as well, just encouraging people online, you know, I can't vote, but please be my yes, and kind of here's why.
So that's the campaign. People will make videos, be my yes.
I know it worked really well for the Yes Equality campaign as well, and it was quite powerful because there's so many Irish people abroad who can't vote.
So can you explain a bit of the context about why people can't vote when they're overseas?
If you've left Ireland and you've lived outside of Ireland for more than 18 months, you just can't vote. I think a lot of it comes down to, well, like maybe you've moved to, you know, Australia like 2 months ago and you might be eligible to vote, but like it's a lot of money.
Not just recently, but over the course of the time that Repeal Global has existed, what kind of reaction did you get from Ireland? Were people interested or more focused on what they were doing on the ground, or quite a positive response?
Yeah, it's been definitely overwhelmingly positive, and it took off a lot more than we thought, because I think it just gave people a platform. I don't think we did anything out of this world. I think we just were like, here, lads, does anyone want to do this with us? It just kind of, people were like, oh, maybe we can do something. And then from there, I think it's got a lot of people engaged and kind of ignited abroad, which you might not be able to vote, but that still matters, because you're going to call your mum, you're going to call your dad. You know, maybe if you can, you'll fly home to vote. And I know that that's happened with a lot of people I know abroad that might not have been actively involved. And like even Anne, like my sister and stuff, like she's really involved now in that. And that's impacted our family and that the way I think a lot of them are going to vote. And it's impacted my mom and the way she's going to vote. It really has. And my mom had never had a conversation about it. And then when she found out that me and my sister were involved in it, and she'd never talked about it. She was on the fence. She wasn't kind of yay or nay. You know, she's quite religious. But she got the train to Dublin and went to the march on her own in 2016 because we couldn't go. So she went up and she'd printed out letters that I wrote into Kenny to give people. And she thought there was going to be like 20 people at the march. So she'd printed out like 20 copies.
And Enda Kenny was the prime minister at the time.
Yeah, and there was, of course, like 20,000 people at the march. So she ended up meeting my cousin there and went on a march. That was actually one of the most emotional things for me on the day when we had all these marches and all of the hard work had like paid off.
They're genuinely inspiring to see the global support.
I think it's just people feel like that they're involved. And especially like I was gone as well for Yes Equality, and I know loads of other people were. And you feel like you're missing out in history. You're like, oh my God, like things are actually changing and like we can make things change. And usually it's like, you know, local politics and like whatever. But like these are like huge historical things. I remember feeling so sad when like Yes Equality happened. You're like, oh, that's going to be a great crack today in Ireland. But like, I wish you were there to kind of help and just to see that change. And so I'm hoping it's the same for this. I think it's a different fight, but don't think we can take anything for granted. Irish women have been through enough for centuries. And, you know, it's 2018. And I'm hopefully in the last year, even with the Me Too and all of these little things where it's kind of like, you know, women have been through a lot. Can we just have a bit of choice? Can we just have control over our own bodies?
Repeal Global co-founder Karen Toomey. In this next clip, Claire Brophy outlines her contributions to the campaign.
You have been involved in the abortion rights campaign for years, and you're now part of the national campaign at Together for Yes. Can you tell me your own interests and your trajectory of your activism, how it developed?
My day job is as an academic. I just did a PhD in English literature, but my interests are in how Irish culture has treated women's bodies and so how we think of them. So it feeds a lot into the activism, and the activism has a lot to do with how Ireland treats women and working on getting better healthcare for women. I mean, repealing the eight spans across maternity rights. I was involved in setting up the abortion rights campaign years ago when it was called the Irish Choice Network, and then we made sure that we had the word abortion in the name. That was really important for us. More recently, I was involved in Strike for Repeal, which happened on the 8th of March 2017. A note to the government that we needed a referendum on the 8th, and now here I am, I'm in Together for Yes, which is the referendum campaign. I started years ago because of a really, really horrible poster campaign put on by the anti-choice side, extremely fundamentalist Christian group. I saw it and I just found it really offensive. I knew of a friend who had recently gone through it, and I just thought, that's absolute nonsense. It makes me so angry, and I wanted to do something. So we did. We set up the abortion rights campaign.
Describe the posters.
It was pictures of very sad-looking women saying abortion tears her life apart, and then fetuses in utero saying abortion tears my life apart. For the fetus ones, it turned out a Swedish photographer who had done them as a sort of an art thing, but they had been co-opted by this group, and it was apropos of nothing. I don't think at any time there was anything politically happening around abortion law. But it was a big mistake because they mobilised so many people like myself who just saw them and thought, who the hell are you to be telling people and judging people and trying to make them feel shame for a situation that nobody really wants to go through? I mean, nobody thinks they're going to be in A&E on Christmas Day, but someone is. So just have some compassion, just let people do what they got to do.
So you spent years with the abortion rights campaign. What type of work were you doing, and what are you doing now here at Together for Yes?
I floated around, ARC. I've done loads of different things. I was in the media group for a while. I worked on social media. That was really interesting. I was in policy and advocacy, so worked on kind of political submissions to political bodies. We went to the European Parliament and made some really great contacts. We have so much international solidarity. It's really, really encouraging. Like, it really, really does help to know, yeah, actually, we're not imagining it. It just isn't normal here. It's not okay. I've done admin work, which is really nice when you just don't feel like doing all the kind of front-facing stuff. Then actions is really good as well. It's a kind of non-violent direct action, holding space, protests, demos. I tend to always have the megaphone at the March for Choice, which I really love. And there's something I really love about filling the streets of Dublin with echoing women's voices and just like filling up the city with women, happy, defiant. Yes, we're here. We're going to keep going, and we're going to be here. And the March for Choice is going to keep going, and we'll be fighting to defend this stuff. For as long as I'm here, I'll be defending it.
So the March for Choice is an annual march on the streets of Dublin, the capital. Mm-hmm. It happens the end of September every year. Every year the march has gotten bigger and bigger. Yeah. Give us an example of some of the chants. Oh, I'll pull the mic back. Hold on.
No, I'm not going to chant. Well, it used to be, get your rosaries off my ovaries was a really good old one. But in recent times, we're trying to get less religious. Hey, hey, ho, ho. The Eighth Amendment's got to go.
You! Okay, thank you. The abortion rights campaign is one of three groups that have come together. The National Women's Council of Ireland, the Coalition to Repeal the Eighth Amendment, which is made up of, I think, 80 groups, if I'm correct, and the abortion rights campaign being the grassroots abortion-focused group that's been running for about 6 years.
Well, the work I'm doing at the moment, it's called regional mobilisation. So I'm in touch with a lot of the groups in rural places or in smaller cities around Ireland, just checking in with them, making sure they have everything they need, their canvassing is going okay, leafleting, that they're not getting too harassed, that they're just feeling good, and just like giving them a bit of support because it's really emotional work.
You managed to hit every county in Ireland?
Yeah, we hit every county, and that was great, and it actually did me good. It was really positive to just meet a lot of phenomenally hardworking, deadly people.
We're in an unbelievably tough context, but there's definitely a serious but solid optimism around Together for Yes headquarters. Yeah.
I try to tell myself it's not optimism. I try to tell myself that it's realism. I'm really objectively trying to read, because we're also in our bubbles. I'm asking my sister, like, is it all over your Twitter feed? Is it all over your Facebook feed? And she's like, yeah, it's everywhere. So I can't imagine the alternative. It means so much more than just the Eighth Amendment to pass this. It means so much more. There's been such a sad history of treatment of women in Ireland. And even in the last few days, news here has been really bad. There's been a murder and there's been a sexual assault of a 16-year-old just in the last 2 days in the news. And I just think that this referendum is now almost like a reparative exercise. We can change history, we can make it good, and we can kind of look back and say, sorry, this ever happened. This never should have been the way it was for you. And we're going to make it better. We're going to make history we're proud of.
Together for Yes campaigner Claire Brophy To close, Maria Nilartha discusses work in Ireland to hold the referendum in the country's two official languages.
My name's Maria Nilartha. I work predominantly for the campaign platform, which is all of the civil society organisations that are together for Yes. So everything from the Irish Family Planning Association to Inclusion Ireland to disability and migrant women's organisations.
Tell us about your t-shirt.
So my t-shirt says Tha, which is the Irish word for yes. In Ireland, our ballot papers are in both Irish and English, regardless of where in the country they are. Everyone who's voting yes will be crossing out in Tha as well.
How important is that to voters?
Here's the thing, 70,000 or so people speak Irish as their first language in this country. We also have 6,500 deaf people in this country who use Irish Sign Language as their first language. And I think to a lot of people, in order to actually reach them and engage with them, you need to engage with them in their first language. There's not other places in the world where you would talk to people about domestic politics in another language, or it would be expected that you would engage with domestic politics in a language that isn't your own. We've been having this national conversation right through the campaign. That is what we've said we've been doing. That is what we have been doing. And we have to have that with people in their own language.
Are there any specific issues around abortion access related to language?
For the deaf community, it is huge. British Sign Language and Irish Sign Language are completely different sign alphabets. So you'd have to find an interpreter here to go over with you. As well as that, while the overwhelming majority of Irish speakers do speak English, it is not their first language, which is also a problem. Moreover than that, we tend to live in more isolated areas. So the three largest Gaeltachts are as far west as you can go, south, north, and in the middle of Ireland.
And Gaeltachts are?
Gaeltachts are Irish-speaking regions. So Gaeltachts are designated areas where Irish is the primary and pretty much only official language. Across Ireland, you will have signs bilingually. In Gaeltacht areas, you won't have any English.
And the Irish language media, are they addressing the issue differently? Are the conversations different than the mainstream?
No, I think there is a greater understanding because, again, Gaeltacht areas, you tend to have more difficulties with poverty, social isolation. I think there is more of an acceptance that life is difficult. The No campaign have basically been coming out is saying, oh, life is perfect. We can make life perfect. I think if you're from a marginalised community like the deaf or Irish language communities, you will know that life can actually be really, really tough and are more likely to be empathetic towards people and realise that there isn't a clear black and white solution to everything and that you have to really let people make up their own minds about things.
On May 25th, the country of Ireland voted 66.4% to 33.6% in favour of overturning the country's abortion ban. New legislation legalising abortion was introduced in Ireland in October, and services are expected to be in place in early 2019. Under Ireland's new legislation, pregnant persons can seek termination within the first 12 weeks of pregnancy from a medical practitioner. Doctors must discuss options and impose a 72-hour waiting period before performing surgery. Together for Yes campaigner Claire Brophy, Karen Toomey, co-founder of Repeal Global, and Maria Nilartha from the company Platform, talked with Woman on the Line producer Aoife Cook about their work to secure a Yes vote. For Wings, I'm Sarah Newton.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Podcasts of recent programs can be found at our new website, wingsradio.org. Wings has often covered reproductive rights during our 32-plus years of distributing programs for broadcasting. For info about our archives, email wings@wings.org. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughan, whose books include Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. Find it and more at gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.